97.9 FM, WCHL, and chapelboro.com present The Art of Potential, an illuminating talk show dedicated to getting your community educated, hired, and inspired. The Art of Potential combines real-world knowledge and expertise aimed at helping our community reach their full potential. Now, The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Hi, this is Kristen Heemstra. Welcome to the Art of Potential show. I have a great guest today. I have Mayor Mark Kleinschmidt. Welcome, Mark.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, we have a very interesting show because rather than talking about the politics of Chapel Hill, which I know everybody is just, you know, so excited about, we're actually going to talk about what it means to be a mayor.
I think I know a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think you do too. So I'm actually interested in your story, like what inspired you, your path, how you got here. So can you kind of give me an idea of what it was or what inspired you to move in this direction?
Well, about, let's say, about 15, 16 years ago now, mm-hmm. I came back to Chapel Hill.
Did you grow up here?
No, but I was an undergrad here. So I first moved to Chapel Hill in 1988, about 25 years ago. Did my undergraduate studies at the university. I was a teaching fellow, so I had to go teach high school.
You did.
And I did that.
In Charlotte Mech?
In Charlotte, that's
yes.
right.
Yes. Okay, so what'd you teach?
I taught social studies.
Okay.
Perfectly aligned with my current job.
Did you teach civics?
I taught civics. Yes. And I taught debate.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, so you were priming yourself.
Yeah, and I even created a geography elective around how cities grow and develop.
Oh, fantastic.
And at the time, Charlotte was a very dynamic place with lots of change occurring.
Yes.
That's when they got the NFL team, and amazing things were happening in Charlotte. So that was a fun experience, but I knew that I wanted to come back to law school, and I was fortunate enough to get to come back here to Chapel Hill. And so I returned in 1997 and thought I would just be here for law school, but got involved in campus politics.
Okay.
And which is a whole nother animal.
Yes, it is.
But I was involved in a lot of student organizations in the law school mm-hmm. who needed funding for some of the work that we did, some of the great work we did in the community. And one of the sources of funding is UNC student government. So I was elected the representative to the student Congress.
How many people ran against you in that election?
Well, no one ran against me in that election.
How many people want that position? All right.
No one did. Yeah. So, yeah, I had to prove that I was electable mm-hmm. by getting 20 signatures on a petition, which I did.
Yep.
And then I think I won with 3 votes cast.
Yeah, right. That's all you need, though.
Yeah. And I served there for a while, and I was able to bring back some student government money to some of the programs at the law school.
All right.
And at the same time, I was listening to other law students saying, hey, we need help with some things. Like up on the corner at Ridge Road and Country Club,
yep.
there was a nightmare. There were no sidewalks. There were no crosswalks. And
that's a major intersection on campus.
Yeah. Lots of car traffic and lots of pedestrian traffic. And they don't really get along very well.
No.
So I worked really hard.
Unless there's a hospital right by.
Yeah, no. So I worked really hard to try to get a sidewalk and a crosswalk put in there. The town said, well, that's campus. And the campus said, no, that's the town.
Okay. So your first foray into... Yes.
Yeah.
What is now probably your daily experience.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But getting success on that issue was very empowering.
Mm-hmm.
Very interested in continuing that work in the community. And at the time, this was my second year of law school in 1997, the Daily Tar Heel actually ran an editorial that suggested I should run for the town council.
Oh.
And that really got my...
Yes. Hello.
My interest up.
Yes, of course.
So I didn't, in fact, do that. But I did become the Speaker of the Student Congress. Okay. And I was the second graduate student to ever do that, which allowed me to get even more involved in local issues.
Is it usually undergrads who do that?
Yeah, it's because the Congress is dominated by undergrads. And after I graduated from law school, I got a great job at the Center for Death Penalty Litigation. And my partner at the time was in politics.
Okay.
And he was the mayor of one of our western suburb, Carrboro.
Okay.
And he was very.
He had some inspiration there.
Yeah. I was seeing what he was doing.
Right.
I thought, and he kept kind of poking me. He's
like, yeah.
Really, you should do this. You know, the DTH said you should. You'd be great at this. And so in 2001, there were a lot of retirements on the council. And so I decided to throw my hat in, and I was very fortunate to have come in fourth, which is all I needed to do.
Okay.
And took a seat.
Okay. So I just want to recap all this because this is a very interesting story. You started by doing teaching fellows.
Mm-hmm.
So that, teaching fellows is a great program in the state. Hopefully it will be funded. We'll see where that funding ends up. But you then owe the state 5 years, is that right?
I only owed them four.
Four
but
years?
I did
okay.
five.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they pay for your education. You pay them back by teaching. So it's actually a glorified loan in the form of an education.
That's right.
And if you move out of the state, you actually have to pay them back. But anyway, keeping it moving. your chosen area is social studies. Have you always been interested in communities and politics? Was there anything in your childhood community that was interesting to you?
Yeah, I was always interested in politics and the way that people work together to try to get things done.
Okay.
And I didn't really understand that that's what politics was
right.
until... I don't know, I was a teenager or something, but it always fascinated me. But how, I think I credit my early childhood teachers, with talking about the way teams work together
mm-hmm.
and how we, as a team member, you draw upon different strengths of a group.
Yes.
And how, it's okay that you don't have every strength necessary to solve a problem, but what you go and find someone else who does, and then you have a strength to marry with their strength, and then together you can get something accomplished.
I just want to say education is slightly different now.
It is?
It's slightly different. Now you just have to have all the strengths and test well on all the subjects, and then you're good to go.
that's the only path to success
right.
now. My early childhood
right.
teachers were great,
It sounds like it.
That was in Hawaii and New Mexico and Goldsboro, North Carolina. And they were...
I'm sorry, Hawaii, New Mexico, and Goldsboro?
Right, that's where okay. I grew up in those areas. In all those places. I was actually born in Illinois. So I don't really have any other hometown.
Right.
Any real
hometown. I understand that well.
So, that's kind of what... how my interest in working right. with people came.
So it's actually, it sounds like an interest you have in behavioral psychology of seeing how groups function to make things happen.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to describe it. And you have to, but you also have to have faith and confidence that it can get done.
Yes, you do.
I'm not that uninterested scientific observer.
Right.
I actually want to get it accomplished, but sometimes that faith is tested.
Yeah, I can imagine it's tested frequently.
Yeah.
All right. So fascinating journey on kind of how you ended up moving into this space. So then you took a seat on town council.
Right.
And so educate me about how the town council works.
Well, usually council members come to their service with a lot more experience than I did.
Okay.
My experience, as I described, was in student government on
yep.
campus. Most of the other council members have had long histories of serving on boards and commissions, and I'd never done that.
Yeah.
So I kind of had to learn by doing. I had some great colleagues on the council early on, and I was by far the youngest member.
Did you have to campaign hard?
That first race, 2001, was a
yeah.
bear.
Yeah.
There were four seats to be filled. There was only one incumbent running, so there was really just three opportunities to
right.
take a seat, and there were 13 candidates.
Oh, my.
And I was the youngest, and many folks had thought that maybe I was... could have been described as one of the least experienced.
Right.
But I wore out some shoes. I knocked on thousands of doors.
Okay. You went door to door.
Yes.
Okay.
If you had ever voted in a Chapel Hill election within the last 10 years of 2001, I was knocking on your door.
Okay.
If you didn't answer, I left something there. And I didn't have a lot of volunteers. It was just me.
You were going to win. No, I love that.
So, and I never thought for a moment that I would. I never let myself think I was going to lose.
Right.
Again, it's just that, you do something with confidence that you're going to achieve it. I remember my sister, who served as my treasurer that year, she said, well, now, Mark, what are you going to do if you don't win? You know, are you going to come back again in a couple of years? And I said, well, no, I'm not running 2 years from now because I'll be in the middle of my first term.
Come on, Michelle.
Because I was just, this is what's going to happen. Otherwise, why would I be spending this kind of energy and time on something?
You are listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra and Mark Kleinschmidt.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra with The Art of Potential Show, and I am talking with Chapel Hill Mayor Mark Kleinschmidt. So, Mark, my question to you is, how has being a mayor pushed you to grow as a person? Because I think that would be a job that would push you to learn a lot about yourself in a lot of different ways.
It certainly has. You know, working as a council member was so different than being a mayor.
Okay, so stop and let's talk about that for a minute. What's the difference? How does that look?
Well, as a council member, I was one of eight.
Mm-hmm.
I had my pet issues.
Yep.
And I would get out front every time they come. They were on the agenda. If it wasn't as if an issue came across our desk that I wasn't as involved in, or I knew others were, I could sit back.
Yes, you could.
I could let others take the lead.
Yep.
As mayor, you don't have that option. I have
everybody's issue is your issue.
Everyone's issue is mine. I have to manage every conversation of every issue that comes before us. I also, you know, I can't behave in the same way as an advocate.
Right.
You know, when I was on the council, I would figuratively take my shoe off and pound it on the desk.
Right.
I would become indignant, righteously so, of course, if I wasn't getting my way and fighting for people in the community. Don't get to do that anymore. So, and you know, now as a mayor, I want all of our council members to be successful.
Right.
You know, we have an at-large system here in Chapel Hill where everybody in the community gets to vote for every council member, and I believe in the decisions that they made, and I want the decisions that the community made is to each person is on the council to work for the community. So I struggle at times with some members because I don't agree with everyone all the time.
Right.
But I try to find ways to help them each be successful and demonstrate some leadership. That's a very different thing than a council member would do.
Right.
But it does kind of draw me back to my teaching days.
Oh, I would think so, you know? Yes. So, herding cat days.
Yeah, kind of like that. So, you know, I kind of try to use those same skills and remember that just because I don't agree with someone, that it doesn't mean that I have a right to shut them up or that they shouldn't have an opportunity to try and persuade me. And that's one thing that I've learned as mayor is that I need to be open to being persuaded.
Okay.
And not just by council members, but in the community. There are so many things happening in a town like Chapel Hill we're relatively small. But we have a national brand.
Right.
The world looks at us.
Right.
When great things happen.
Right.
And when not so great things happen.
And you also have university. It's not just the town.
That's what I was thinking of.
Yes. I caught it. I gotcha. Yeah.
They draw us attention to our community in good ways usually.
Yes.
But it's hard to have a handle on the ins and outs of every single issue. Now, I think I like to believe that my experience on the council and as mayor has allowed me some insight into the way things work that maybe folks who don't give this kind of time to something has. But I've learned that I can't know everything, and I learned to question any conclusions that I may have reached in the past. I may have just decided a certain thing was the right way.
Yeah, I can understand that.
I question the conclusions that I reach constantly. And to decide, you know, and receive input from wherever it comes, and that's been kind of a struggle because, since I was 10 years old, you know, I've always thought I was right. That's right on everything. Now that I'm mayor, I've learned how wrong that is. I am not always right. And my mind can be changed in the middle of a council debate, right in the middle of a deliberation. My mind can be changed.
Do you have more sympathy now for different politicians as they're called wishy-washy on issues and things like that?
Yeah, and I really wish that people had greater tolerance for elected officials who are persuadable.
Yeah.
because they're actually doing the work I think we want them to do.
I would agree with that.
You know, listening to people, reflecting on their issues and concerns, mm-hmm. And modifying things as it needs. You know, there are some things today that, well, there's things in the past that I've felt very strongly about that I've kind of moderated some of my positions on.
Can you give us an example?
Well, I remember several years ago I was on the council. There was an effort to create an economic development office mm-hmm. for Chapel Hill.
Yep.
I wasn't too excited about that.
Okay.
I was highly skeptical about whether that could actually do anything for us as a community.
Other than suck money out of the office.
That's yes. exactly what yeah. I was afraid of. You know, it was just going to be a high dollar hire.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to hire someone who was very skilled at running out ahead of successful ventures and claiming success. Look at what I did. What you've shown me is that you ran ahead of something and you run faster than other people to the TV camera. That's what you showed me. That's what I was afraid it was going to be.
Okay.
And so I knew that the council was ready to do it, though. I could sense on that we were going to create an economic development office. So I insisted on being a member of the committee that defined the work of the Economic Development Office.
Okay, so you knew it was going to happen. Mm-hmm. You were just trying now to, in a sense, get ahead yourself.
That's right.
Be the first.
Well, since I was so skeptical, right. I wanted to be able to see how the sausage yes. was really going to get made.
Yes.
And that whoever we hired wasn't just doing that.
Right.
It wasn't just, you know, lipstick on a pig.
Right.
And so we, you know, I started working and we defined the goals of the office by bringing in a huge variety of stakeholders, people who had who closed businesses in Chapel Hill and moved away.
Okay.
We brought them in and asked them why.
Oh, that is so, thank you for doing that.
Yeah, and people who stayed when times were tough, yep. we asked them what kept them here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
what kind of answers did you get?
Well, people would leave Chapel Hill because, as Chapel Hill became much more part of a larger region and mm-hmm. goods and services were more accessible to our citizens, folks, it wasn't an obstacle to drive from here to Durham in
right.
search of goods and services
yeah.
as it used to be.
Right.
And when I came...
Yeah, Durham is no longer a foreign country.
No. There are cities in this country that are bigger than Durham and Chapel Hill together, and no one would think about driving that far for
right.
a good or service. But we used to be separated, so
very much
really
so.
Felt far away. And so as that happened, you know, each community started developing strengths in certain economic areas. And so those areas of strength that Durham had,
yep.
If you were involved in providing that good or service, the market just dried up here.
Yeah.
And there wasn't anyone here to, you know, give you the heads up on that
right.
or helping you transition into something right. else or, you know. And then we also didn't have a good assessment of what we did well. At the same time, so we were watching these things happen. People move out and people move in, and we didn't know what we did relatively better than other communities. We didn't know what we did relatively worse. We hadn't been doing these studies,
so we hadn't had the self-reflective piece going on, telling us this and that.
Exactly,
okay.
We had anecdotes,
right?
But we didn't have the studies done,
the data,
and finally, you know, we did that, and we learned what we do really well and what we don't do very well. For example, this is not probably a good home for a heavy industry,
right.
you know, manufacturing
right.
kind of outfit.
No.
But if one of them chose to locate in Mebane or Hillsboro, this would be a great place for their corporate headquarters. You know,
we just want your bosses.
You know,
we have good schools.
We have good schools.
Yep.
You know, it was a great place to locate Orange County is.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes maybe we could divide up some of these things. And we actually began to work with other communities in that way. You know, like, let's work together to get some new industry into Orange County.
Yeah.
And then different parts of our county can benefit from it in different
Wonderful.
Ways.
Wonderful. Oh, look, you're going back to, you know, building your classroom.
There you go. We're all going to build on the strengths that we have.
Right.
And don't fret too much about the weaknesses we might have. We lean on others to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that dynamic really changed the economy of Chapel Hill. And some people are being more successful than others. And we also learned that there are some things we could just do a little bit better here to help those who are right on the edge continue to be successful.
We are going to take a break. This is Kristen Heemstra with the Art of Potential Show.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra with The Art of Potential Show, and I am talking with Mayor Mark Kleinschmidt. So we were just talking about how you were going to get ahead of this economic development office or person that was going to be hired by the community and help kind of define the role. So how did that all come about or play out?
Well, as I said, we brought in all these stakeholders who gave us insight into what we're doing well and what we weren't.
Right. That's brilliant, by the way. Just brilliant.
And we used that information to create the job description and job plan for our first economic development officer. And before Dwight became a member of our town, he knew exactly what his charge was going to be. And you know, he came in and tweaked a little bit, offered some of his professional insight, and, you know, because some of the stuff we weren't really that great on as far as time horizon, like how long some things would take. But he added his professional expertise, and it's just been gangbusters since, at least as far as our ability to respond to the needs of our business community. And it's not something I was known for before I was involved in this effort. And I gained so many skills and know so much more about what small businesses in Chapel Hill need. It's very different than what small businesses in other places need. Yeah. My former partner and I had a store in Wake Forest.
Okay.
That failed during the economic downturn, and the needs of that store were very different than what needs are in our community. So we have to be thoughtful, not because of the way our economy works and how we lean on other communities the way we do, that we need to meet our specific needs. And then we're not wasting the money. We're not throwing good money.
No, not at all. Now, and every community needs economic development, and we have an amazing Chamber of Commerce here. I mean, fantastic. But it's nice to have the town kind of have a complementary, you know, ability to work.
Absolutely.
Symbiotic relationship.
Yeah, and we have folks who are willing to take on different roles. So the Chamber does its job very well, and it's great that it's kind of separate because that gives it freedom to do certain things that we can't.
Yes.
Our downtown partnership, which brings the university in. So with downtown economic development work, we have their participation, and then of course the town is its separate EDO, and the synergies are really working, spinning in the right direction now.
So do you see your job then pretty similar to managing a classroom?
Well, it's funny. I in a way, yes, but I wouldn't consider like the council or citizens like my students.
No, I understand but, that. They're not children or anything, but it's like you're managing energy in a sense.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. Because it's unexpected, you know, there's always something crazy that's happening, you know. You think that by moving that student to the front, then you've kind of quieted him. But no, now it's just going to happen in front of you.
I got a better seat to be more loud.
So you know, as far as unexpected energies and learning how to redirect those energies into positive outcomes, you know, being the mayor, I receive a great deal of criticism about our community, or at least people articulate a lot of concerns they have about their community.
Well, you're the guy. I mean, you're the go-to guy. If you have a problem, well, let's go talk to the mayor.
Exactly. Which, but, you know, I'm kind of like, in a lot of ways, too, I'm also kind of like the Wizard of Oz. You know, I'm not really handing out brains or hearts or anything like that. You know, and because as the mayor, I don't really have a whole lot of power.
Well, okay, so that's a great question great segue into my question, which is, who holds the power of the town, of a town, any town?
It's the council as a whole.
Okay.
I am only one of nine on the council. There's very little I can do on my own. I have to have at least four other members of the council agreeing with me on a position, or it dies.
Doesn't matter.
And you will rarely see me on an issue that we have discretion as far as bringing forward into the council. You'll rarely see me on the losing side because I will have spoken to the truth to my colleagues before we started that, you know, this isn't going anywhere. Do we really want to bring this up for a vote. Let's create positive change and not just have lots of failures on the council. If it's going to fail, it's probably not going to come up. Now, of course, with development agreements, we don't have control over that.
Okay.
The people who want to do new development are the ones who keep those applications alive, and they have to roll the dice with the council and get five or more to support them.
Well, and rolling the dice, it does sound, is what happens when you go into the town council.
it certainly has been true. That's been true in the past for sure. It's true some of the times today. But I think it continues to get better. We have created we hope are low cost processes for developers to get feedback early on before they spend a great deal of money on a project. So they are in a position to present something to the community that the community really wants, rather than having to have some long, drawn-out fights. And I say we try to do that, but famously we've had a series of very long, drawn-out fights. But, of course, those are the ones that are covered on WCHL.
Right.
You know, these ones that come through that are very simple and easy. They started off on the right foot and got unanimous votes.
Nothing.
You know, Elizabeth Friend doesn't spend much time reporting on those.
No. You get nothing.
No.
It all worked. Woo! Oh, and moving on.
Next. Where's the controversy?
Right. Well, but I do want to go back to the council, because I do think that some of the council meetings must be energetic. Because we do have a rather energetic community. So how do you manage all that exciting energy that's out there?
I try to reflect on how excited I am to live in this town. I mean, this is
so
my
that becomes
hometown.
Your core base that you operate from.
Yeah.
Like anytime the energy's getting warm, you're like, I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I love
that's
this place.
That's a fantastic way to do it.
I love this place, and whatever is kind of maybe getting on my skin or causing me a little anxiety, is part of this place, and you need to deal with it. If you have a family and one of your children is starting to become a little rebel, you don't just throw the kid out. As a family, you kind of figure out how to deal with that energy. You try to redirect it into positive directions, and that's what I like to think we try to do. I'm not always successful, but I try to take concerns that are presented to us, criticisms that are presented to us, and hopefully my goal is to try to empower those who might be critical to help create the change that they're asking for. And if a certain kind of change is not possible, or at least not through the council, I try to help them understand what the obstacles are and why that change can't occur, and maybe direct them to the correct place to seek change. I mean,
place to put out their energy.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
Because if you want the troops out of Afghanistan,
right?
Well, there are people in Chapel Hill who call me.
Oh.
Because they want troops out of Afghanistan. This is kind of a big exaggerated example, but it's a true example.
You know, I believe you. I believe
so
that.
So I have to
help
them understand.
Yes. No, I would imagine that would maybe be calling a different office than yours.
That's right. And we are very pleased to offer our congressman contact. And my aide in the mayor's office keeps Congressman Price, Senator Hagan, Senator Burr, Senator Kinnear, Representative Insko's phone numbers are right there next to his phone.
I'm sure.
And he redirects a lot. And, you know, Afghanistan's an easy one, but some of them are hard to know.
No, I would agree with that. I would agree with
and
that.
And I don't blame people for not knowing.
No.
You know, because people ask me, why can't we have another crosswalk on Franklin Street?
Yeah.
It's perfectly logical that it would be a local issue.
Yes.
It's not.
Oh, and that's a surprise to me.
It's a state highway.
Oh,
and
I forget that, but I did know that at one point.
For us to get a crosswalk over that road is takes a Herculean effort.
I would imagine, because you'd have to go to the state and get a vote on it.
Well, we'd have to get the Department of Transportation to agree, who would have to come out and do all kinds of studies, and then they would need to come up with some money, and we would have to come up with some local money. And I know this how difficult it is, because the new crosswalk on West Franklin Street, it took years. We got the local money to do that when we approved the Franklin Hotel. So imagine how long you think the Franklin Hotel has been there. Go back a couple years before that, because it took a couple years for it to even get started.
Wow.
And up until 2010, which is when that crosswalk finally appeared.
You know, and sometimes I'm so excited about the human potential, and then sometimes it's just like we have the potential to really make things so much more complicated. You are listening to the Art of Potential show. This is Kristen Heemstra.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemster with The Art of Potential show, and I am talking with Chapel Hill Mayor Mark Kleinschmidt. So we were just talking, Mark, about, you know, some of the roles of your office and your role as mayor. Let's kind of broaden that and talk about how are you connected to, say, Congressman Price?
Well, all of Chapel Hill lies within his congressional district, and so we remind him of that as much as we can.
We love you, well, which is why we're so loud.
we are so grateful to have someone who's so aligned with our community's values representing us in Congress. And we, you know, as I said earlier, people call me about all kinds of issues that aren't things we deal with at a local issue. And so I often connect them to his office. Where we can, and sometimes I actually join with a citizen in asking for a certain kind of change to be made. One of the ways in which we worked together recently to the great success and benefit of the town of Chapel Hill was in acquiring $7.5 million for new buses.
We like that.
Great thing. Because the people at Chapel Hill, they wear out some buses.
They do. They have bus communities. Like, we're serious about our buses.
Absolutely. We pack those buses. And we need new buses every 8 to 10 years. Those things have a short lifespan. Yeah. And so we need to, and they're very, very expensive.
Yeah, they are.
So he helped us to get a $7.5 million grant from the from the Department of Transportation. He advocated for us and helped grease some of the wheels.
Yes.
We were able to come up with our local matching, and we celebrated just recently a ribbon cutting for 15 new hybrid buses for our community. And so, you know, we work together on those kinds of issues. And then there's the bully pulpit role of the mayor that sometimes David helps me amplify a little bit. So if there's a strong issue, there's an issue that's affecting the town, for example, or at least it affects people in our community, that people and a lot of folks in Chapel Hill care about an issue like gun control, which I'm very involved in as a member of the Mayors Against Illegal Guns, or marriage equality. Mm-hmm. Nothing that the mayor of Chapel Hill can do anything about by himself.
But
yes, we have Congress member and we have state legislators who are aligned with our community's vision very well and assist in helping amplify the message. So when I was in Washington in January, I was on MSNBC and, God forbid, Fox News, doing some work on with the Mayors Against Illegal Guns. And David was very supportive of that effort. You know, also, I think he understands as well as I do about that it takes all of us working together.
Right.
He is one member of a very contentious deliberative body.
Yes.
And he needs us on the ground to be making this kind of noise.
Yes.
So he helps me with $7.5 million grants. Right. I help him with hopefully getting better background checks for people who buy weapons.
It's a fair trade.
I think so. Yeah. And it's all, I hope, to the benefit of the people we both represent.
So how are you connected then? So I understand how you're connected and you work in congruence with your congressional member most of the time. And I'm sure there's different communities where the mayor is in a different position than the congressional rep and all that kind of stuff. But how would you be connected then to the governor's office?
The little more of a tenuous connection. It's difficult to get to the governor. And
I would think as a mayor, it would be easier, but it's more difficult.
Well, it may be easier than many other people, but
right.
But it's not. At least my experience so far has been Governor Perdue, and just a very short time with Governor McCrory. Mm-hmm. The governor, of course, has to deal with the state legislature, and it can be very challenging. And I think I think Governor Perdue just had such a difficult time with the Republican state legislature that it was just difficult for us local folks to really inject ourselves in there. That was almost it was a lot of Raleigh navel gazing. They just weren't looking for anyone else's help. I'm hopeful that the new governor may make things a little different.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
For the first time in my memory, Governor McCrory invited the mayors of the largest cities to the governor's mansion. He had to have conversations about the needs of our largest cities.
Is Chapel Hill considered one of our largest cities?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Okay. And most importantly, though, he was a mayor.
Oh, yes, he was of Charlotte, mm-hmm. that little place, yes.
Yeah, that little town just west of here. So they often confuse with Carrboro.
Yeah.
But, you know,
as mayor,
with
C.
What's that?
They both start with C.
There you go. Yeah. Easily confused. They both have great football teams. Jaguars and the Panthers are great. But as a former mayor, he understands urban issues better than any governor ever has.
Yes, that makes sense.
He fought really hard to get the transit system in Charlotte to be on par with Chapel Hills, honestly.
Oh,
and actually move ahead of us by bringing light rail in and working with the community to help understand why it was important for the local community to invest in transit. We need someone who's going to remain that way in the governor's mansion because our legislature isn't so excited about that. So the cities really need him to stay an advocate. We'll have to see whether he does that or not.
No, and that's going to be an interesting thing because the state legislature represents the state, and a lot of the state is not, you know, urban at all. There's a lot of rural parts of the state, and I can see where one of the, you know, members of the state legislature wouldn't have a lot of interest in things like that.
Oh, no. And the state... And the state legislature, in their redrawing of districts most recently, made sure that urban issues are even less important than they should be, given how many people live in cities in North Carolina, because they divided up the cities into little wedges and then put huge rural areas attached to them so that there really aren't very many urban representatives.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. You know, this whole census redistricting thing is just, wow.
It's going to be a real challenge to everyone who lives in a city for a decade.
In North Carolina, and I'm curious, I wonder how other states are handling that too. As in your role as mayor, are you in contact with other mayors of similar ilk cities?
I am. That's been one of the really most rewarding and sometimes most exciting part of this job that I didn't know about before I took it, before I ran for it. One of the ways in which I've been able to amplify our local voice on a lot of national issues is through my participation with the U.S. Conference of Mayors.
Mm-hmm.
I serve on several committees, and through them became involved in the Mayors Against Illegal Guns, the Mayors for Marriage Equality, mm-hmm. working on technology issues and how cities can inspire that innovation, and becoming an innovation city. And we're on our way to doing with the university's cooperation.
Yeah, fantastic.
These kinds of things would not be available. And it's not just cities like Chapel Hill, although I have a great affinity with mayors of, you know, places like Gainesville, Florida,
mm-hmm.
home of University of Florida.
Yes.
Athens, Georgia.
Yep.
Ann Arbor, Michigan. But also, Anise Parker, the mayor of Houston, is a great friend of mine.
Oh, wonderful.
It's one of the largest cities in the world. Antonio Villagrosa, the mayor of Los Angeles, and I became very friendly. And one of my favorite stories is Chapel Hill was awarded from the U.S. Conference an award for its work during the WISE program, which is helping homeowners here in Chapel Hill upgrade their homes to be more energy efficient.
Yes.
And we won this big award from them. And I ran out, I went up and accepted the award. I ran out into the lobby to call back to Chapel Hill. And out comes another mayor who was on his way to the facility.
And
came up to me and said, "Congratulations, Mark." And then walked into the men's room. And I said to my friend who I was speaking to on the phone, I said, "Yeah, that was Rahm Emanuel." And yeah, he knew me. He knew me because he knows Chapel Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And the
that
town of Chapel Hill has provided such great leadership for this country on so many issues. And it wasn't Mark. It was Chapel Hill.
Yeah. No, I can see the riding in on those coattails because no matter where you go. And before we started the show, you and I had a conversation just about growing up in different places. But Chapel Hill, there's connections all over the world to the town. So I can completely see where that would be a great place to represent. And we're very glad that you are our mayor. So let me just say that.
Thank you.
I'd also like to thank you for being on the show.
It's been a delighted
pleasure to have you on. You have just listened to the Art of Potential show with Kristen Heemstra and Mark Kleinschmidt.